Live from the United Way of Southwest Virginia Digital Studios, this is United Live, a podcast production of the United Way of Southwest Virginia. My name is Ryan Dye. I'm the manager of marketing and communications, and we're back for a part two today, continuing our conversation on developmental screening. Both Danielle and Adele are back from our previous conversation, as well as a new voice in this episode for you as well. Today, we're going to learn about the transition from Part C to Part B services as your child ages out of the early intervention program. That conversation coming up right after this.
Hi, I'm Christy Lester, Director of Development here at United Way of Southwest Virginia. We hope you're enjoying this podcast about the work that we're doing to make Southwest Virginia a great place to live, work, and raise a family. If you'd like to learn more, please contact me at 276-628-2160. I look forward to hearing from you, and thank you for your interest in United Way of Southwest Virginia.
So with us today we have...
I'm Rhonda Bennett, the local system manager for the Infant and Toddler of D-Lenawisco. We serve Lee, Wise, Scott, Dickinson, and the city of Norton.
Thank you.
And I'm Adele Rohner. Thank you for having me back, Danielle. And I'm the local system manager for Mount Rogers Community Services Infant and Toddler Program. We serve with Smith, Bland, Carroll, Grayson, and the city of Galax.
Great. Thank you. And so before we jump right in, why don't we talk a little bit about Part C, or Early Intervention Services, and Part B services, just so our audience understands when we're talking about a transition from Part C to Part B services, that they understand the age ranges and what those services are. So, Rhonda, why don't you share a little bit from your perspective about Part C, and then Adele, you can share Part B.
Part C services, we work with babies birth to three with developmental delays. So that means that a child has to have 25% delay in one area of development, or a medical diagnosis, or some sort of atypical development. There's lots of different ways to qualify for that. And like I said, we can serve babies up to the day before their third birthday.
So in the day before the third birthday, the child stops early intervention services. And so if there's still going to be a need for them to receive support in their development, that takes place through sometimes the Part B system or the school system. And so children can actually start that referral process the year they turn two, as long as they're two before September 30th. And then school services can take on a couple different it's not always the child going to or being in a classroom. Sometimes it's just bringing your child to the school to get the speech or the OT or the physical therapy. Sometimes they will send a school staff to the Head Start, or sometimes they'll even go into local daycares if they have enough. And in some cases, they even do take place in the home. It's just where early intervention is primarily in the home, Part B is primarily not.
Thank you for that clarification. As families are looking at the transition from early intervention into those school-based services, what are the costs associated with the transition from Part C to Part B?
So there should not be any costs associated with the assessments or the services that take place. I know that school districts can bill Virginia Medicaid if your child has Medicaid, and they will ask for permission to bill, but they can only bill the services, so speech or occupational therapy or physical therapy. So the assessments are usually at no cost to the family.
Great. That's a huge lift or a weight lifted off parents, I'm sure, as they're thinking about these transitions. And so, Rhonda, can you share with us a little bit about the criteria required to transition to those school-based services? We mentioned that they have to be three or aging out of the system per se, but what other criteria would they need to transition to those school-based services?
So Adele and I were talking about this over lunch, and how that kind of also varies from school system to school system. Like for the systems that we work with in the areas we serve, we usually get told 35% delay in one area or 25% delay in two qualifies a child for Part B services. But that can also vary. And then I totally lost my train of thought there.
So it has to, for a child, like early intervention, where the service coordinators and the team that's assessing that child can use their clinical opinion to say that the child would benefit from services. For a school district to qualify, besides having those percentage delays, there also has to be an educational component to it. So if, you know, the child might be showing a delay in fine motor, but if that's not impacting their ability to learn or participate in the classroom, they're not necessarily going to qualify for occupational therapy. Even with speech, if it's not impacting their ability to understand or communicate, they might be a little harder to understand, but they're not necessarily going to qualify for speech because it has to impact their educational background. The schools all have different standards than early intervention, and they're not able to pull in that professional opinion to determine. But families, if they are concerned about their child's development and it's not being offered to the school, they do have other options. They can take them to outpatient clinics and receive that support as well. And they would just have to go through their insurance. So unlike the school, it might not necessarily be free, but there is an option.
Okay. Also good information to know. So as your child is transitioning, is the process that they would speak with their therapist and say, I'd like to start preparing my child for transition to school-based services. What can you do to help me get that started? Is there paperwork that has to be completed? Do they need to meet with the schools? And again, we understand that it can vary from district to district or school to school, but what does that look like?
So we're going to start together.
So in Part C, your child is assigned a service coordinator, and the role of that service coordinator is to help you as a parent, connect you to any services, any community resources, those sort of things that you might need, and to also make sure that the services that you're getting through Part C are the right services for your child. So your service coordinator is the one that you need to talk about. Transition services are going to be handled by your service coordinator.
And there's steps to that process. We start with a transition planning meeting, which is really just your service coordinator. You know, your child is getting close to that age where we're going to transition them. So they're going to talk to you about your options and kind of lay them out on the table. And then your service coordinator, if you want them to, is going to schedule what's called a transition planning conference. And at that conference, they're going to pull in Head Start or the school district or whatever options you're considering for your child. And that gives those programs a chance to tell you a little bit more about their program, what their processes are, and what's offered through them. And then you can talk to your service coordinator about making that referral to that program. And then your service coordinator is there to help you through all the steps of that process.
Our service coordinator for Graham, my son, has been extremely helpful in guiding us through our assessments every 6 months and really thinking through, like, what are the next feasible steps for him. So I know that service coordinator plays an integral part in those transitions. How do you think that we can make it easier for parents as they are planning for this transition?
I think listen to your service coordinator. We actually start talking about transition with the very initial phone call that I get with a referral. So even if your child is 2 months old and I'm calling you to get started in our program, I'm going to mention transition. So we do mention it often. I think parents need to keep an open mind. And just, you know, take advantage of the things that are offered, the meetings and the conferences, ask a lot of questions, reach out to friends and family that you might know that have gone through the same, system, and your service coordinator can help you connect with people as well. So just kind of be an open mind.
And I would just add that as a parent, it's important to know that just because we say that you're going to transition to Part B and that school services does not mean that you're sending your child to school at 3. That just means that they're going to provide the services that your child qualifies for until they go to school. Now, some school systems do have a 3-year-old program that your child certainly could qualify for and go to, but you don't have to do that. So just know that just because we say school services or Part B services, that doesn't mean that you're necessarily sending your child to school all day in a classroom.
And it sounds like flexibility is the key for families as they're making those transitions, finding the right fit for their child or their family, whatever their needs are, is what's going to be best for them. And I think from my perspective as a parent, continuing to advocate for what's going to meet your family's greatest needs is what you have to consider as a part of the transition plan. So what role do parents play in the transition, and who is a part of your transition team? As you're thinking of these school-based services, whether they're necessarily in the school building or at a home, who's a part of your transition team?
Well, so I mean, a parent's role, like you said, I mean, they're their advocate for their child. They really do have to, they know their child best, and they need to speak up. And hopefully their time with early intervention has given them the confidence to be able to do that when you're meeting with all of these people from the school. They can be a little intimidating. Transition teams vary, again, from school to school. I mean, your service coordinator is part of it. I know in my area, some of our therapists actually also work in the school district. So sometimes it's the same therapist that's doing the school evaluation that is coming out and treating your child in the home. That's probably not the case in all areas. But your therapists are there to help you, service coordinator. As far as people from the school, I'm not always sure. And I think the director of special ed is usually a part of the meetings. They usually have psychologist. I knew I was going to mess up that word. That works under them, that does like the family assessment and everything. And they're probably the ones that we meet with the most often, besides the therapists that your child might need. Mm-hmm. Do you know who else would be part of those meetings?
Sometimes there's a teacher.
True.
But other than that, I think you pretty much got it covered.
And there are a couple different agencies, too, that I just thought of that will help be an advocate for your child. Just for whatever reason you feel like you might need that support going into these meetings, there are places people you can reach out to help
give your voice. Can you give us an example of some of those agencies?
So Moms in Motion is one of the bigger ones in this area that I hear the most. Mm. And they can, I mean, they're somebody that your service coordinator can hook you up with to kind of get started. And they're just there to help make sure that your child's getting everything that they need to meet their skills.
Moms in Motion is also an agency that can help you if your child qualifies for waiver services, which is a whole other thing in itself, waivers. But they can be very complicated, and there's lots of different waivers, and some are for kids right now, and then some kids may need them later on. You need to get on that waiting list, so Moms in Motion can help you with all of that sort of thing, too. It's a good resource for parents to have.
And is Moms in Motion based out of Southwest Virginia, or are they a statewide agency?
That I do not know the answer to.
Do you know? I think they are statewide. I really do.
They might be.
But I do think that they have people that live in Southwest Virginia that work with families in Southwest Virginia. So you're not going to get somebody that lives out in Virginia Beach.
Sure.
That deals with a lot of different things out there that doesn't know anything about our area here. So,
and Rhonda, you mentioned three-year-old programs. We're seeing a lot of three-year-old programs now pop up that are school-based programs, just based on various funding streams from the state and how those are being implemented into the districts that they serve. Would it be best to also include those classroom teachers as you're thinking about those services as well, just because maybe they can provide some insight or maybe not? I mean, I'm not sure, but I think that classroom teachers laying eyes on students can be helpful sometimes.
I agree with that. And I think that as a parent, that it's just helpful to know all your options, even if in your mind you're thinking my child is just turning three and there's no way I'm sending them to school, then maybe just talking to that teacher and learning more about the program, you know, you might realize that is a really good option for my child, or it might just verify to you that that's not what you're ready for right now. So I'm all about knowing about what's out there.
Sure. How long does the transition from early intervention to this Part B or these schools-based services take? Does it vary from child to child, or is it pretty standard as far as when your child turns three, you're going to be moving into this? What is that time frame look like?
So, I mean, I would say it's very individualized per family to some extent. So like we said earlier, children can start that transition process the year they turn two, as long as they're two before September 30th. So some families might start it when their child is about 20 months or so, with the anticipation that they're going to go to school services that next school year. And then they may decide last minute that they want to stay with early intervention. So they're going to stay with us until they're three, which is a whole nother year and a half. And then others might decide right before they turn three that they are going to need to pursue that as an option. So they are going to be in that process for a lot shorter time. The school districts do have a state guideline. Once they receive the referral from early intervention, they have 65 days to get all of their stuff done. So it shouldn't take any longer than 65 days once that referral's been made. But it also just depends on things.
Yeah, and I think it's important to mention, too, that a child can't have an active IFSP, which is what you have with Part C, and an IEP, which is what you have with Part B. So you can't have both. It's got to be one or the other. So if you're transitioning to the school and the school gets all their evaluations done, you've had your eligibility meeting, and you know what your child is going to get, then you have the right to go ahead with the school system and begin those services with Part B. But you can always stay with Part C until the day before the child's birthday and continue to receive those services. So lots of choices there.
And how do we prevent gaps in services? Is it just more being proactive and really working with your service coordinator to ensure that smooth transition?
Your service coordinator should be talking to you about transition from the get-go. So it should be something that is frequently brought up throughout your time with Part C. And the reason for that is so there's not a gap in services when your child turns three. So we work very diligently at that and making sure that kids don't leave us not getting what they need.
Great. And this is one of our last questions, but what other advice would you give parents as they are preparing for this change, maybe both emotionally and physically for their child? Because I, from my own parent perspective, I've become very close with our therapist. They're a huge support for us, and I kind of dread the day that we have to leave them. So, but I would say, what other advice would you give to parents as they're thinking about these changes?
Well, and I would say it's a bittersweet time for the service coordinators and the therapists as well. In a lot of cases, like your son, we've been with you since you were born. So, you know, this is our child too. We've taken possession of them. So I would say just be open-minded to the things that everybody is saying. Remember that they're not coming to you from a place of judgment. They're coming to you from a place of caring. They really do want what's best for your child, and they want you to be able to explore all the options that are out there. So just be really open. Ask a lot of questions. Write them down if you have to. Tour the centers that you're considering going to. Most of them, especially now that some of the COVID restrictions have been lifted, we're able to get back in and tour them again. So go check them out. I mean, even if you think, I'm never going to send my kid there, go look at it anyway, just to have it and know what's going on. Ask for help. You're not in this alone. There's resources out there.
Yeah, and we've mentioned that parents are your child's best advocate. You know what your child needs. You know them the best. So ask the questions. If there's something that you want for your child that you think the school should offer, then put it out there. You never know until you ask what the answer is going to be. So,
well, this has been extremely helpful from my parent perspective, but I also think for other parents who may be listening, sometimes there is a fear based with the school district, and sometimes there's a fear with a home visiting type of program. And I think you look at both programs as you're looking for success in your child. And so I think that early intervention and Part B or school-based services both bring a lot to the table to make your child successful. And I'm just grateful that you all are able to provide your insight for those parents who are in that transition phase. It's a lot to think about. We don't think about our kids getting older, growing up, but it's important that we continue to ensure that there are no gaps. So I'm grateful for both of you today and for your time. I know you're both busy, so thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.